Welcome to the Middle Age-ish Podcast, authentically and unapologetically keeping it real, discussing all things middle age-ish, a time when metabolism slows and confidence grows. Join fashion and fitness entrepreneur Ashley Bedosky, former Celtic woman and founder of the Lisa Kelly Voice Academy, Lisa Kelly, licensed psychologist and mental health expert, Dr. Pam Wright, and highly sought-after cosmetic injector and board-certified nurse practitioner, Trisha Kennedy Roman. Join your hosts on the journey of Middle Age-ish.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Middle Age-ish. I'm Trisha Kennedy Roman, and I'm joined here today with my co-hosts, Ashley Bedosky, Lisa Kelly, and Dr. Pam Wright. And today in the show, we're going to be talking with Megan Ragsdale. Megan's been a very successful business executive, now an executive business coach, and also the author of the book Risky Women. So she's going to talk to us about reaching our full potential business.
Love it.
Personally.
Yep. We all need it. Yep.
Definitely. I think it's really easy to kind of get stuck in a rut, especially at this point in life. And I think just finding ways to get out of that.
Right. I mean, that's like when you start that new chapter, what does it look like? You need your village. You need people to help you. And I think that that's what's so great with like just the whole coaching aspect of it is that I know like with the executives and that's something that she'll talk about. But I think just getting a coach to help you get to where you want to go with whatever career path that you're looking for this next chapter, whatever that looks like.
I think last week talking with Dr. Ryan, I've had it stuck in my head, his Etch-a-Sketch, and I love analogies. I use them when I argue with my husband. He doesn't like my analogies, but his Etch-a-Sketch. But I think, again, just rerouting, because if you get in the same, you know, if you take the same path every day, it kind of becomes autopilot. Yeah. So if you get in a rut, staying on that same path and kind of being an autopilot, I think just figuring out different ways to different pathways, shaking that Etch-a-Sketch up like he had talked about.
I do think that was amazing. Like I'll catch myself like, you know, shaking like, okay, here we go.
Yeah. And it goes back to like, who do you trust to like the war room or the Oval Office? Like who is your person that you trust to help you move forward? And sometimes you need professional people to help with, you know, career type things.
I think that that's the one really cool thing as we've done these podcasts is how, even though they're very different people and different professions, different, you know, everything, how much it all ties together. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that today, just as I have listened to the podcast over and over, just how it all ties together to just better yourself, really.
Because who doesn't want to be a better you? Because, you know, again, like you talked about, like what we've mentioned week after week is we're now in that stage of life where we're taking all of the knowledge and the things, the lessons, the peaks, mm-hmm. the valleys. And at this point, you want to put it to good use and you want to move forward in such positivity and find that purpose, whether it's in career or, you know, what your family, your life, whatever, but moving forward again and just being positive. So I think that's what's amazing. Like you said, Trisha, when everything's kind of pulling together, but from different aspects, which I think is what's also so amazing.
I love how all these, like, you know, all this coaching is so prevalent these days among all areas. I mean, we didn't have that when we started off in work. You just went in, you did your job and you had to learn.
You just busted.
Exactly. Yes. And we're so inclined to better our aesthetic look and everything about us. But when it comes to like our actual mind or our actual job, it's so hard to find the time as well to do things. So it's so great to have all these resources available to people that you can just turn on a podcast and you can listen and you can gain something or know that other people are going through the same thing as you and that resource is out there for you to find.
And just helps you, just like coaching can help you like create new patterns. Like you were saying, you don't want to get stuck in the rut. So if there's someone external that you're, uh-huh. you know, who's encouraging you and, you know, making you make different choices, what's 28 days to make a habit, then that's good because then you can create different pathways and neuro pathways and it just helps with your thinking and everything.
So if I get on my Peloton for the first time for the 2 years, for 28 days, then I'm really going to like doing it.
28 days. I don't think you'd like it. I would say it would be a habit. Then when you don't do it, you would be like, oh my gosh, what should I be doing?
Break a habit. So like, I know it's 28 days to make a habit, but isn't it like crazy, like 7 days to break it?
I was going
to
say anything can break it. It's mm-hmm. just like, I just want this right now. So it's kind of like what we talked about too with the, you know, there's the immediate gain and then there's the long-term reward. So the Peloton one time is not going to help you, but
I literally got stuck in mine. I had to call my friend who has a Peloton because I can't get my feet out of the pedals. And I said, I can't. She said, just twist your ankles. I'm like, I'm going to break my ankle. So I had to take my feet out of the shoes and get out of the pelvis. So I've not gotten back on.
Ordeal.
It was an ordeal. I've got to figure that one out.
Traumatic. I wouldn't get back on the
pedals. Are you still on the pedals? Probably, because I only rode it that one time. And that was like, whatever.
Trisha, I just love you. I mean,
get them in my closet.
That's it, trauma. Looks
nice. Okay, this right here, Peloton.
It looks like
I have got the setup.
Yeah, I did one cycle class. I never did it again. I could not walk for days after that.
It hurts in places you didn't know it could hurt.
I think we're talking about the same thing.
That's what I've heard, which is the why I've never done it. Now, I have friends that are diehard and I mean, amazing results. So, yeah.
You know, it's so funny. So I ordered those biking pants that have the padding.
Oh, yes.
To make it better. And my husband's helped me fold laundry and he pulled those up and he thought they were like washable diapers or something.
He's like, baby, what
middle age?
What are you keeping for me?
That was the first thing I did after my cycle class too. I went, okay, I need padded shorts.
Have you ever worn them though? I've never worn them.
No, I never went back to the cycle class because I wasn't going back unless I had an epidural this time. Like, I'm not doing this with an epidural. I've had four kids and that did not hurt as much as that hurt.
Knee pain medicine.
Oh, it was woeful. Never again. Never again. That's why I'm at bar.
You gotta pick your poison.
That doesn't hurt me as much.
Thank God.
So now if you give up the Peloton, are we going to find your shorts on sale on eBay or something?
Possibly. Oh, there's other sites for that.
Wait, what?
Yes. Oh, Ashley. Are you so pure?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can sell your underwear online.
What?
Yes. I make money out of it too.
Okay. I think that this is going to become a theme on every single week is how can we shock Ashley?
I wish that people could see your facial expressions. Exactly. That's my favorite part.
I have no words, which is shocking. I mean, I do have words, but
people will buy them and will spend a lot of money on us.
Are they like
dirty? They're dirty underwear. Not your clean folded underwear straight out of the dryer.
And you realize that Victoria's Secret, they have a tag on. You're like, okay, so I bought a medium, but I'm sorry, I'm an extra large.
No. The dirtier, the better.
Pam, we have to talk about why that happened.
I think that there are different sites for different things. So I think that yours, the ones with tags would go on Poshmark.
Yeah.
And the ones maybe without tags would go on
we hope our listeners are on the Poshmark site instead.
Yes.
You could sell anything.
Please. Baby Jesus and Mary.
Like, we could have a whole segment on how to shock Ashley.
Where have I been? Although I'm glad that I don't know.
Yeah. Although you could have made a lot of money.
That's disgusting. Pam, I'm going to really need to have a session with you.
We all need a session after that, I think.
Bring it back around.
How do you stay away from that? Don't get it.
But I was thinking as you guys were talking about coaching, because when you're a kid, you have your parents, you have teachers, you have coaches, and then you're an adult. And so I think that, you know, coaching is so helpful because we've had guidance all along, and then you're kind of expected to do it on your own and guide little ones.
I think the word coach, just in any aspect, whether it's athletic, whatever, I think it's just encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Or should be. Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I think in every aspect of it, just love the word coaching.
Yeah.
It means getting better.
It does. And you have to.
I'm so sorry. I'm trying so hard. It is just, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I do, but.
When I've had a bad day, I just want to picture Ashley's face when we tell her one of these things.
Yes, exactly. So now I know that there is like a side text message group, the three of you, and be like, what are we going to talk about tonight?
How to shock Ashley. Yeah. Who can shock Ashley?
Obviously, it's not that hard.
I mean, I've learned
don't know where you've been. For this, I felt like I was somewhat worldly, and I feel like I actually am not. I lived under a rock somewhere. So I'm really, really nervous about what the next lesson's going to be. Traumatizing. Ew. I need some tequila. I don't even know how we pull this back. I do not know how.
Oh, Ashley. Well, we are going to have to get it back together now because we have Megan Ragsdale here to join us. Again, Megan is an accomplished certified executive coach, author, and innovator. She has a passion for helping people learn how to get out of their own way and reach success. So we are excited to have her here this evening and to gain some valuable pearls from her. So we will welcome Megan now to the podcast. Hello, Megan. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm great. How about yourself?
Doing great.
Welcome to our podcast. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. It's funny. I think we're wanting to be in California because everyone is in California. So I think this is a trend for a reason.
We do need a field trip.
Yes.
You absolutely do. Although I miss Atlanta. I really do. It's the one place I would move back to out of all the places I've been.
So I haven't had a chance to tell them. I just remembered as you said that I found Megan because finding awesome people to talk to. No idea. She used to live here in Peachtree City and went to UGA. Now, what a small world is that?
That's amazing.
No kidding.
Peachtree City is so funny. There's so many connections to Peachtree City. Even like when I moved here 11 years ago, and about 6 years ago, my sister sent me a message to tell me that her best friend's husband had just gotten a job in Pinewood Studios at the time and was that anywhere close to me. So my sister's best friend lives here in Peachtree City now. And I've met about 10 different people from Dublin since I moved here. It's crazy. So it's wild. And it's so small. I mean, you know how small it is. It's just crazy.
I've been visiting there for probably 20, 25 years. And just to see the evolution from 25 years ago is unbelievable.
It is. It's got so busy. It's just, and there's so many Californians here now as well. Yeah. You feel quite at home.
Our housing prices have gotten just the other side of ridiculous. So I get it.
Okay. So we have to ask, how did you get from here all the way to California?
Well, I'm an East Coaster, born in New Jersey. Basically every section in school, I moved to a different place. So it went New Jersey, Michigan, Syracuse, New York, UGA, lived in Atlanta, and then went to Germany and lived in England and Germany for about 4 years as an expat. And then I came back to Chicago, flew out to meet a friend here, and just decided with no job or anything, I need to be in San Diego, and just moved out here and started working for Deloitte. And then I've been here ever since.
Wow.
Well, it's a beautiful place.
Gosh, the weather. You just can't beat the
weather. Isn't it like 75, sunny, no humidity all the time?
Yeah.
It's okay. You can own it. It's fine. I know we're jealous, but yes.
But no thunderstorms.
I mean, I can do without the, you know, Trish and I growing up in Missouri, we can do without the thunderstorms.
Yes.
I'm envious. I wish I could be sitting there with three of my friends doing a podcast. I think this is phenomenal.
It is fun.
Yes.
We were just talking about coaching and how it's so great that coaching is available now, because we didn't have that when we were younger. And, you know, when we're kids, we have teachers, we have parents, we have coaches. And then you adult, and then you have little ones that you're coaching, and you're kind of out there on your own a little bit. So I think just the whole idea of coaching in general is just a really great idea.
I could not agree more. I think therapy plus coaching is the most powerful combination. And I think if all of us had both together, we'd all just be in great shape.
Yeah, that's true.
I love that you all are doing this podcast, and you were talking about this in your first couple of episodes where you were really kind of unpacking what middle age is like and what that means for us. And I think I also, like some of you, really bristled against that terminology.
I know, right?
Right? Yeah. It's just so blah. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling like, I'm not having a crisis. I actually feel more centered at 47 than I ever have before. So I think there's so much freedom that comes with middle age that feels great. But what's interesting too is because society just kind of wants you to shut up and go away because you're not really that relevant. You have even...
Yeah, they want to put you in a box.
Yeah. They do. And at the same time, because you're not the center of attention anymore, it's freeing in a different way, because I feel like you're left with what really matters and what actually brings long-term tangible happiness. And I think that if we could give that to ourselves for a longer period of time when we're younger, man, that would just be... be incredible.
It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked several times about at middle age that there's really two categories that we're in right now. There's some people that are very confident and happy at where they are at this stage. And then Ash just pointed out before, there's some people that haven't made it to that point, and you're kind of almost lost and looking back, or they don't know who they are now. And I've heard you talk a lot about getting out of a rut. And, you know, I was telling the girls too, I heard you talk about rumination that one time. I think I mentioned that to you, because I'm very bad at dwelling on a problem or dwelling on something that's upset me, which is not good. I mean, you can really get yourself stuck in a rut that way. So even for people who are not in the corporate world or just kind of at this point and feeling a little stuck, what are some of the top things you tell the people you're coaching?
Rumination is just a favorite pastime of all of us. I would say a couple of things. And I also think you brought up something important too. And if you would indulge me for a minute, I'd love to just tell you how I came by way of the statement I just made of feeling better at 47 than I ever have, because just 2 years ago, I would not have said that same thing. And so when it comes to getting unstuck, I think my real plea for women is to not do what I did, which was to wait until you have two mini strokes and have that be a result of your over-functioning and stress and not taking care of yourself. And that is what brought me to a really full transformation in my own life from a health perspective, emotional, cognitive, the whole 360. I had to really, really prioritize it. So if you are in a rut and you're feeling miserable and you're feeling unmotivated and you're feeling like you just can't make any traction, what I normally start, there's a couple of different ways that I can get at this with people. And sometimes people want a tangible exercise that they can do. And sometimes people really have to go slowly because they've had such a long lifetime of kicking their own ass. They really need to be able to come by way of self-compassion with themselves in a really gentle and slow way. So I first try and gauge what the comfort level is of the person. But one exercise that's a really kind of low bar that'll at least put you more toward the direction you might want to go is I have people just draw two pies and I have them split those pies up into what I've determined are the foundations that really make up all of our lives that matter. So imagine each pie has 100% and I ask them to label the pie on the left. So you have your fitness, and that's mental and physical. You have your fire, which is your romantic component, your finances, what you do for career, your friends and family, and then something that I call the fifth element, which is what you do as a woman completely independently of the relationships with all of the other people in your pie. So your pie is split into those five areas. I ask you to create a percentage of the amount of time that you are investing in each areas of those pie today. And then I ask you on the right one to imagine how you want to change those percentages in the future. So sometimes in coaching, a version of this is you're doing a time study of where you're spending your time. But to me, this is different because it takes it to a whole 30,000 foot level of if where you want to spend time is on your physical and mental wellness, but you're noticing that your friends and family are taking 80% of your time over here. The first thing you have to do is create some capacity. So I think even if you don't take the first immediate step, just knowing what direction roughly you need to start creating space in, I think usually helps people get off the starting blocks. I think the biggest problem for people is they feel like they're standing at the base of the Great Wall of China and just taking
absolutely
the first five steps feel completely overwhelming. So I think just getting a little bit of clarity on where your energy is going, I think is a huge way to just get off the starting blocks.
I love that. And I love the fact that you make them like look at that and where do you want it? Because so many people that come to see me, they want to be in this area, but they're stuck in that like, well, I have to be here and I have to be a mom and I have to, you know, yeah. So there's no balance with any of it. It's just all in one piece of pie, so to speak, right? So there's finding that balance and finding like the mindfulness to be able to like spread things out and know that it's okay. It's going to be okay if I leave this piece to go and better myself and these others. Like it just is more being about true to yourself.
I think that's amazing because I mean, we are so hard on ourselves and especially after we've lived like, you know, when you're in your 40s and your 50s, we are still our biggest critics and we are always wanting to be the best at absolutely everything. And I've learned that when I stopped that and I was real and I self-reflected, that's when the journey got so much better, is when I took that pressure off of myself. So I love your definition and description of the pies, because I just think as women in this age group, that's not what we've been taught to think, at least not from, you know, like
it's beware of the tyranny and the should. It's the tyranny and the should. I should be doing more of this because there's your actual self. Then there's, you know, who you really are that maybe you and only one or two other people in your life might ever really get to know. And then there's the real self. And then I write about there's an adjusted self, because that's what we're all doing on top of it. And that's exactly what you're saying, Ashley, is we are serving the role that we believe other people want us to be in. Because as women, if you look at just going back to high school sociology, the Maslow hierarchy, you know, when it comes to that base of the triangle, what's really talking about safety and security when your women and your financial security is different, when your physical safety is more at risk, when you are considered to be the caretaker of your community, you're really stuck in the lower levels of that triangle. And it's really hard to get to self-actualization mm-hmm. because you're spending all of your time and energy caretaking all the different things. And even though they always tell us to put your own mask on first, I know zero mothers who would ever do that. In reality, yeah. on a plane, it's just,
and right. it's just not who we are. Like, it's not in our DNA.
Right. It isn't. And that's the part that I feel like we have been fed the wrong message about. I think if we actually made it okay for ourselves, even our conditioned selves, to show up as the women we truly are, as you're saying, yes. mm-hmm. and kind of dropping the expectations and really just taking that risk of being who you really are. I mean, that's the most rebellious act that any of us can do as women.
Right.
It really
is. And just evaluating like where I am now versus where I want to be can be so changing, life changing. I mean, I'm stuck here, but I really want to be there. Well, how do we like move to that area? I think, and you had to do that, it sounds like, for yourself.
Absolutely. And it was a dumpster fire moment for me. I mean, that stroke happened when I was on a field trip chaperoning my kindergarten age daughter. And it wasn't like I hadn't gotten the warning sign through my body earlier. I just looked like, I'm tough. That's, you know, I was raised by two Brooklyn, you know, tough New Yorkers. They don't take aspirin. They don't go see the doctor. You know, you just kind of carry on, right? You just carry on and you overfunction until my body just gave out on me. And I had to completely reevaluate everything that I was doing. So I took myself into a really intense fitness program. I took myself into therapy at 46, you know, which was amazing and life-changing on so many levels. And really just had to sit with my husband and say, look, I have really got to prioritize my health. We've got these two small children. I run a 400-person company. So Risky Women and most coaching is my passion and is my, you know, side hustle. But by day, I run a really large retail organization. So there's a lot of different things that I've got to be doing all the time. But you know what I realized after making these changes and making some prioritization and putting me first in some cases? Is that nobody died. Nothing bad happened. My head was still attached to my shoulders. Where is the line between you being compassionate and gentle with yourself? And when are you letting yourself be too small and not take enough risks? And I think that's the thing that I'm constantly metabolizing internally. And that's the thing that I think I haven't even landed on. What side of that I really believe yet. I'm still sort of unpacking that.
I think it comes from peace. When you get to a point in your life where you are at peace with for myself, because my aha moment was very similar. When you come to peace with the journey and the lessons and who you are as a human, that's where things for me started to open up. I was less judgmental of myself. But when I'm less judgmental of myself, I'm less judgmental of others. So like it was always this two-sided street. And I think that that's why I'm in that group where I'm really embracing this stage of my life is because I'm finally finding peace with who I am and what that means. And it comes with grace. Yeah. You know, that's my favorite word is I ask for grace and I give grace. But that is built on really hard lessons. And, you know, cause again, it goes back to that's, we were taught to just be super strong and we handle everything and we don't show emotions other than happiness. And we keep our families together and we take care of our babies and we want to raise good humans. But you, at some point in your life, you hit that wall where you actually have to give yourself grace. So that's my answer to your question.
I love that. My daughter's name is Grace. I also love that.
Oh, okay. It's my favorite.
I love that you talked about judgment because I think one of the big lessons that I've learned and that I also see really come out in people that I work with when they do the work is when you are so damn judgmental of yourself, it is impossible not to let that leak out in little criticisms
Absolutely.
To everybody else in your life. And as soon as you can learn how to be easier with yourself, the easier it is to find that empathy and that mindful empathy with everyone else. So I absolutely love what you just said. I think that's a key component.
And I love the woulda, coulda, shoulda, like don't shit all over yourself. You know, like we learned in therapy, but gosh, there's so much I relate to. Like I definitely went through my own illness, couldn't walk for a couple of years. It was just like I had mono and just kept going, 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 and my body kind of turned on itself. And it from that came a different relationship, a different career change. Like everything went kind of upside down for me. But it's great in the hindsight because it was all very clear, right? Like everything just kind of like came into play. But I was as you were talking, I was thinking about I had a conversation with a client and she was talking about how, you know, in her, I'm not bashing men or saying men are different in this way, but in her situation, you know, it's like if her husband's not feeling well, he's like in the bed, but like women, just like we keep going. Like there's no, and I know for me, I'm very much like, I don't stop. I can't tell you hardly any
there's days. There's memes about
that. In the entire 10 years, like you just keep going and that's your thing. And so sometimes I think it's hard for women to sit back and say, okay, but wait, what's really, really important? Because I know I'm the one that has to keep going and moving no matter what. And so I think that we judge ourselves if we get in a place that we can't do that, number one. And then number two, just like having that, the ability just to say, it's okay. Like it's okay to stop and I need to stop and like really listen to my body and listen to my head and listen to like where I want to be in life versus where I really am. And evaluating those things takes time, but you really have to take the time, the mindfulness, like you really advocate, which I love, to really do that and just to make those evaluations.
Ashley, you said the trust podcast is, I'm thinking this one's for me because you all are scaring me right now because I'm almost 47. I've not had the health crisis yet, thank goodness, but I go 100 miles an hour all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting here listening to you all getting scared, thinking I need to get on the Peloton.
I tell you, when you're on the other side of it, God forbid it ever happen. I know for myself, like it was the biggest gift that I could have been given. And I know that sounds so incredibly crazy, but I am so thankful to this day because that's where the peace and the grace for myself came from. You know, I'm a big believer that life is not checkers, it's chess. And it's, you know, that's part of it. And, but I am thankful to this day that I went through what I went through because I came out on the other side, someone that I'm actually proud to be, you know,
I agree.
And I think that that's what I love about this podcast is because that's what I want people to see, whether God forbid hopefully they don't have to go through something serious, but to find that peace and to find that self-grace. Cause like you were talking about it transcends. If you are mm-hmm. graceful with yourself, you will give grace to those around you and, in all aspects.
I think that if you don't take the time to make yourself a priority and figure out where you should be in life, it's going to catch up.
Well, life will give it to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of determines what you're going to do.
Yeah.
My situation would have been different. I was always a risk taker. Anyway, and I'm really impulsive. So I don't think about the outcome. So I just like dive in, do what I think I want to do and then figure it out. So I've always been like that. And my husband is like that too. So like we're a lethal combination together. We'll like go, oh, I think we need to move. And then we just move. Or we need another dog because Trisha convinced me to get another dog.
You got me in trouble.
So I'm still waiting for my kind of aha moment and kind of moment to slow down. But I do, as we've talked about before in this podcast, I think because I took a risk to leave a really good job and what others would see as, you know, the dream job and as wonderful as it was. And I really thoroughly enjoyed being a singer and touring the world and doing all that kind of thing. I knew that I couldn't give 100% to being a mom and being a singer at the same time because the kids were on the road with me and I was just physically exhausted. I'm like a calm person. I'm not, I'm neither one way or the other, but like I was so close to a nervous breakdown so many times being on the road and being stuck in a gross hotel room with three babies like crawling around the floor, finding toenails. Like there were so many times I just about lost my mind. So I, as wonderful as it was, and I don't want to sound ungracious in any way for what I had and what I achieved, but I got to that point going, no matter what I do,
but
it'll
you found
be
that
better.
Point.
And I did. And I get
that's amazing,
coach, which I think is therapy in itself. Getting to coach, because sometimes you have to actually practice what you preach.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
you do.
That's
wonderful. That's the whole thing about being a coach.
Yeah.
Is that you have to walk that walk too, or otherwise it's just ingenuine, mm-hmm. and people don't buy into it.
Of course.
Yeah, it's funny with our podcast. My husband is actually quoting things of our podcast back to me now, which is driving me nuts. When I'm not following what we're learning in the podcast. So
I think it's amazing. I think we have to bring the guys on, but anyway, that's a pivot.
Yes. So I'd love to hear how you incorporate mindfulness with your clients as well. Cause I think that's a big part of what we're talking about is figuring out where you need to be.
I'm still ruminating on rumination too. So if you could explain rumination along with that one, because a lot of people, Lisa and Ashley, didn't know what that was yet. I just know it because I do it all the time.
It's educational.
I think a lot of mindful teachings were taken from Buddhism, and two of them that got a lot of play over the last couple of years, especially by Jon Kabat-Zinn and others, Daniel Goleman, are the concepts of rumination and grasping, which is really talking about the fact that at any given time, your brain either wants to ruminate on something in the past, or it wants to try and grasp onto something in the future. It really kind of speaks to the fact that just as people, we don't like uncertainty. We do have a negative bias in terms of our just brain and body chemistry, because our wiring, as a lot of us have heard before, is really the same as it was many, many years ago when we had to fight off predators. And so unfortunately, in a lot of cases, we're really kind of fighting our own brain and blood chemistry when it comes to certain situations and how our body responds to it. So mindfulness is really about creating the level of mastery over knowing what your internal preferences and states are, so that that own self-awareness in you will give you a little bit of a sacred pause between when something occurs, any kind of stimulus, and what your response to it is. So that's kind of on a broad scale what it is. And one of the things that we do very quickly with my coaching clients is after they've really kind of journaled and observed their bodies over a couple of weeks, and record moments where they felt triggered in meetings, or, you know, when they had kind of a flush of feelings, they'll see things like their one client of mine, her fist would ball up because all the blood was rushing to her extremities because she's in fight, flight, or freeze mode. Or another one that I love, especially that pertains to women, is fawn, or what my therapist calls tend and befriend. So going into hyper people pleasing mode, that's another sort of fight or flight response. And that's one that as a middle child, I definitely lean into as a coping mechanism. So there's a lot of just different tips and tricks. I give some of my clients wearables. I give them exercises to do. So when they are in a meeting and there's something particularly disturbing happening, counting everything in the room that's blue, or they have beaded bracelets, and it's just kind of bringing you out of your brain and back into the reality, because really moment to moment, everything is usually fine. The pain and the suffering comes from how we are deciding to either interpret the event in hindsight, or what we're projecting into a worried future, an outcome that we don't even know yet.
So true.
Yeah.
So that's when you think about it, when you get a shot, the stress level that you have anticipating the shot is always worse than the shot itself.
Oh, yeah.
But we do, right? But we do that anticipatory stress and rumination with just about everything. So mindfulness is about bringing present moment awareness to what you're doing, because that I think is really, it's a practice because nobody ever really masters it. Mm-hmm. And so I think looking for perfection there, I have a lot of clients where meditation just sometimes, and Pam, you could speak to this more eloquently than I can from a therapy perspective, but I have a lot of clients who have, you know, diagnosed anxiety disorders and conditions, and meditation tends to ratchet that up a lot in some of them. And so I have to be creative about finding solutions that feel like they work for the different types of people that I work with. And sitting on a mat and oming is not always the answer. So I think really understanding your own internal state is a great one. And one framework that's really simple that I absolutely love, and this book I think is a game changer for marriage and for personal life, is something called The Big Leap, and the follow-on book, which is called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And their entire model is literally a line, a black line, a straight line. And what they say is, when you're approaching any interaction with somebody, are you approaching it from above the line or below the line? And you'll know that because if in your body, you're feeling really defensive and threatened and constricted, like you can feel these things physically, then you're below the line. And it's probably not going to be your best chance for success in that communication with that person. When you're above the line, you're open, you're creative, you're expansive, you're kind of bringing that best version of yourself forward. And I think just that quick check, all day long, we're going to be below the line a lot. It's not about beating yourself up because you're below the line. It's really just bringing awareness to the fact that you are below the line. And that gives you agency to choose a different way to interact, or choose not to interact because, you know, it might not be a great time for you.
I love that because that's really applicable to personal and professional, whether you're going to deal with a friend or you're going to deal with a boss.
It reminds me of like DBT. Are you an emotion mind or are you a logic mind? So I tell my clients, especially my adolescents, I'm like, you know, your life and your thinking should be like a scale. So there's logic and there's emotion. And sometimes if you go too logic, you know, emotion's out the door. And sometimes it's too emotional, then you have like road rage and the logic goes out the door. So
you're tipsy turvy.
Yeah. So figuring out where you are and keeping balance, just like you said, 100% makes sense.
I think about, you know, things I've worried about that never ever came to fruition, and how much time I've wasted worrying about things. And I know that I saw something you talked about journaling, you know, something that you're worrying about and actually putting the actual actuality to it versus the non-actual aspects to it. Can you tell us about that?
All right. I think you might be referring to a cognitive thought record.
Yes, that was it.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So that, I know, Pam, you'll know a lot about that. And that's a great CBT tool that I use all the time for myself. And I also use it with clients. And I think it's a really easy thing to do on paper or in your brain. And essentially, when you said earlier, Trish, about how do you get out of a stuck thought, that's exactly what this tool is for. So what it really does, and why I love this, it appeals to both the logic and the emotional side of a person. It asks you to first kind of unpack that thought. So what's the disturbing thought that you're having that's in a loop in your brain? And you either write that down, you can talk to somebody, you can just do it in your own mind if you want to. And then let's say that thought is something like, I feel like all of my friends are avoiding or ignoring me. So you're creating sort of a rumination around that, and you're creating maybe a story in your brain. There's a narration already going on about that. And so what the thought record does is it requires you to write down the evidence that supports that disturbing thought, and how that evidence is defined as it's irrefutable fact. If a video camera were recording it, it happened. So you really have to dig into the logic and say, okay, what actually happened factually that made me feel this way? And then you go into what is the evidence that disproves your disturbing thought? And you're writing all of that evidence down. And then it asks you to take a little bit of an inventory about what your emotional state feels like at that point. And how I like to add my own little twist onto the end of it is, what's a more helpful thought you could think? I don't say positive intentionally because toxic positivity is a thing. So then I just want them to think a new thought that's less disturbing. Like, what's a more helpful thought? So more helpful thought in that case might be, well, I do happen to know that Lisa and Ashley are particularly busy right now with their families and have been traveling. And perhaps it's just that we haven't had a good chance to sit down and drink some wine together. And it's amazing how your internal state can shift entirely just based on that one exercise. I mean, Pam, I don't know if you have any ads there, but that was such a breakthrough for me to use with clients and people personally.
Yeah, no, I love that. I use that all the time. I also like to use the, you know, well, then what happens and then what happens and then what happens and get them to like be at the bottom. It's like, okay, so yeah, so what, you know,
like,
yeah. it's not like the end of the world, but definitely getting them to like replace the thought with something that's like realistic. Because if you do, I like what you said a lot, because if you do like the whole positive affirmation, but you don't believe it, it's not really going to work. And so changing the thought to be more realistic, not necessarily just positive, I think makes a huge difference.
That to me is, you can do that with your spouses. You can do that with your kids. I mean, it feels like such a flexible and available tool. I mean, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is just right with things that make sense. Because what I love about it is the whole intention is to actually make a behavioral change. And that's really what we're trying to do, is retrain. So a lot of people think about habit. So in my book, I have a framework that's called Finder. And it really runs through a framework that talks about fear, intuition, need, how to actually get in touch with those things that will promote actual growth and happiness versus surface level things like getting the latest Hermès scarf, right? So there's need, then there's drive, which is really a little bit about your motivation. There's habit, empowerment, and risk reward. Most people, when it comes to habit, are focused on how do you create, you know, little structures in order to stop harmful habits. Like, I want to eat less sugar. I want to drink less. I want to exercise more. I actually like to think about an unattended mindset is a bad habit, and it is habitual. So if you are a habitually negative mood thinker and a worst case scenario goer, then the best thing that you could do habitually is not necessarily start with kicking your own butt about what you're not doing physically for yourself or taking care of yourself or shooting yourself to death, but just working on your own mindset as a new habit that you're forming. Because that neuroplasticity that we all have, especially as mothers, like, we have even more expansive opportunities to change our brains than anybody else does. And if we're actually habitually changing the way we think, then we build new neural pathways and we can actually morph the way that we naturally, our natural state of thinking, what our first reaction to something would be. We can actually train ourselves from going negative to going to more of a neutral, not even a positive, but more of a neutral set point, which I think is just really great to know that these tools are there for us.
That's awesome. Well, can you tell us a little bit about your book? Because I love the things you've mentioned that are in your book. I feel like this podcast was actually, this one's for me. And also
for all of us.
how we can get your book.
Yeah. The book is called Risky Women. And I intentionally wrote the subtext, which is how to reach the top levels of leadership or know when it's time to get the hell out. Because again, you got to know when to leave as much as you do when to stay, right? So this book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's available on Kindle. The one thing I will say about it that I feel really proud of, and the feedback I've been getting on it has been reinforcing this, is I didn't just want to write a book that did a good job of identifying the problem, but then offered absolutely no possible solutions or avenues, right? Like, we've all...
Thank you for that. Thank you.
So what I've done is really taken a collection of things, and they're not going to work for everybody, but I tried to give a really large spectrum of exercises and very applicable, tangible things. The men in my life who have read this book feel it is, don't be turned off by the fact that it says risky women. Yes, I wrote it because the journey that we have as women is different. So I wanted to honor that experience by writing this book directly to the people I want to speak to. But the tools in this book are very customizable to any individual. And what I like about these tools is it doesn't require you to wait on somebody else to do anything, to give you permission to do anything. Sometimes with women, we were looking for a permission slip to do something. This book is your own permission slip to really get yourself feeling like you're moving more in the direction that you want to go, and you don't have to wait on anybody else to do it. So my hope is that by adapting some of these exercises in the book, you'll really get to understand your own internal desires and preferences and states better. And you'll feel like you're back in the driver's seat of your career, of your life, and trusting yourself and your intuition again is really what I'm after here. I mean, we need a movement. I want this to be part of the ongoing movement to get women in more visible positions of leadership in all spheres.
Amazing.
I love that.
Well, you have been absolutely awesome to talk to. If you're ever visiting Peachtree City again, definitely.
Yes. Please join us. Please join us for a glass of wine.
Yes.
We would love it. Gosh, I would love that. And I do need some counsel too, because I'm taking the whole family to Ireland in August, and I need some good recommendations on non-touristy pubs and things to go
see. Amazing. Well, as I'll text you afterward, but after, as I always tell people, Ireland is so small that there are no touristy traps. Like, we live all our tourist places because, like, it's just so small. It's so good. You're daughters will love it. It's so much fun. I'll text you after and I'll tell you everything.
Thank you. Thank you. This really was amazing. Thank you so much. Keep the dream. I love it.
Your clients are very lucky people.
Yes.
100%.
Very lucky. So
yes. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
If I can be of any help in the future, please let me know. Good luck on the podcast. You all are doing an amazing thing for women. I love it.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh my goodness.
I love that.
Where do we start?
Wow.
I'm just like, everything she said, 100%. I think that there is snippets that everyone that's listening and us personally can take away and put into our lives and to how to be a little bit better or whatever. I think it's just, this is what we want. This is what we want.
Yeah. I was thinking when she said the grasping, the ribboning. That's kind of my whole entire life. I distinctly remember my dad, who was like the most awesome dad in the whole world, who was a Lisa glass half full all the time. I remember being at Disneyland and being on a ride, and I kept talking about the next ride I want to do. And my dad's like, enjoy the ride you're on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's stuck in my head because I've always been one looking at the next thing or worrying about the past. And so I think that that's something that I took from this, is just really living in the present, which is something I need to work on. Definitely.
And I think for women, it's like we talked about it's so hard to do that because we feel like we're caring so much more.
I just feel like we're conditioned we're conditioned to be a certain way and that we have to make everything great, like we talked about. And it's when you stop and you really start paying attention to what makes you happy and enjoying those moments. But that's part of the journey. You know, like that's the thing. Like we didn't have these tools like that. It's getting to the tools and taking time for yourself is a learned thing.
Mm-hmm. I think as a female, it's hard to do, especially at our age.
Yeah. I mean, cause it's just, you fight, mm-hmm. you know, if you're driven. So I think taking time for the downtime, the breathing, that's a learned. For me, it was a learned thing.
Well, I think that's what this podcast, you know, somebody said it earlier, like, oh, you've worked all day and now you're going to do the podcast. I'm like, you know, this is actually has made me have girl time and made me sit and talk. I get to be the psychologist once a week. So I get my counseling session. So this is my downtime.
You have the comedy hour over here.
We could watch Ashley's face when we shock her with things she's never heard of before.
I know why I'm here. This is amazing.
It's very positive.
This is the only downtime I'll take this time. Yeah. But it's actually a really great time because, you know, we're sitting here drinking wine, talking and talking to motivational people.
And learning.
I know.
And accepting. And I just love it. It's great.
And I think people will say like, okay, well, I have to have like an hour, 2 hours, five hours, a whole day.
Nope.
And it really isn't about that. It's really just taking
downtime. 10, can be 15 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. If you just release, I think it's that release of stress, that release of mind. And it can come in all different forms. It can be like a TV show. Like I know my big release is when I watch The Mindless, which I love The Housewives. But it's when that's my release. I know it sounds so crazy, but I go home, I'll have a beverage and my brain just kind of shuts down. Yeah. And then afterwards, so it comes in all different shapes and sizes, but it's just recognizing that and allowing yourself to do it.
But the biggest thing is everything that she said too is is definitely not just for those in the corporate world, but it's really anyone as far as,
you know, across the board.
Everything said, I could apply to business, but I could apply to personal as well.
Yeah, no, she was great. She was brilliant.
And I so appreciate this group because it does give us that time to just,
just be us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we're all still learning.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should cheers to that.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Love it.
Thank you for joining the ladies of the Middle-Age-ish podcast as they journey through the ups and downs of this not young, but definitely not old season of life. To hear past episodes or make suggestions for future episodes, visit www.middleageish.com. That's www.middleageish.com. You can follow along on social media at Middle-Age-ish. Also, if you have a moment to leave a review, rate, and subscribe, that helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Once again, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the Middle Age-ish Podcast.